Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. Happy 1st of July, everyone. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be back this week.
It is great to have you back, Jason. I missed you last week while you were gone. It
sounded good, though.
Yeah, didn't we? We sounded pretty good. I have to say, I did a pretty good job as a first-time producer.
You pulled through, man.
It's a lot of work, though. I liked when you were the producer more.
It's not like you were on the phone all night with anyone or anything.
you were basically just the producer, except I had to actually go do all the typing, and you got to listen to me complain.
Yeah, something like that. No, after a while, you managed.
You had to drag me through the mud and then be like, just Google it, man. Just Google it. that's all I'm doing on my end. I'm just Googling it. You got to Google it.
The power of the Google machine is wide. Just ask Jenny McCarthy.
Google does answer all questions.
The University of Google.
So before we get started today, Jason, I want to talk about the Houston Astros data leak. They had a little information leak out to the press about some trade notes last season. It created some headlines. So what do you think about the Houston Astros information leak over there?
I mean, I think it's kind of hilarious, right? Because that's like what no team ever wants to have made public.
Yeah.
And it's just dumped out there.
What do you think the chances are of all Houston Astros trade talk now taking place in a dark alley in downtown Houston from now on?
Slim, but I like the idea.
In order to deal with Houston, you have to drive into a dark alley downtown.
I don't think that's going to actually go that far, but I do really believe that every GM that calls is going to make a joke about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, is this being recorded? I'm not going to see this on the internet, am I?
And I liked that they said that they were working with the FBI to try and determine who stole the information. So I think they're trying to legitimately scare at least whoever got their hands on that information and let it go.
Well, they probably should. You know, I mean, it's not exactly like national secrets here where you can at least have some argument for why you leaked the information. I mean, what is that? There is no argument. It's just like, oh, people would love to know this, so I'm going to leak it.
Just to be a jerk.
Pretty much. So now we know that, you know, the Blue Jays and the Rangers called on Jason Castro last year. Well, that's just earth-shattering, because the Blue Jays have no catcher, so the fact that they called about one...
I mean, it was kind of shocking how much the blogosphere conjecture is almost kind of spot on. You know, like a lot of the things that all the people speculate on the internet are the things that were actually going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. I did like, though, this one kind of came out of left field, because you weren't thinking of the Astros as someone going to buy a frontline player you thought they were going to sell. But the idea of them trading for Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that one kind of stood out.
That one I didn't see coming.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether, you know, how legitimate the legs underneath that were. But it was definitely interesting to think about Giancarlo Stanton in Houston for Correa and George Springer. I mean, I seriously, like, I feel kind of dirty talking about it. And that was how I felt after I posted it. You know, we posted the link on our Facebook page, and I felt kind of dirty doing it, but it was just so engaging. Like, as a baseball fan, it's just so neat to see how everything works behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's kind of dirty, but, I mean, it's interesting, though, like, the Mariners, or the Marlins, obviously, I mean, I think they're more in the right ballpark, talking Springer and Correa for Stanton. And the Astros come back with Jared Cozart and Delino DeShields. It's like, get out. What are you, nuts? I mean, there was a lot of that, which is kind of like I said, it's not that surprising, you know, that the one team's going to ask for the moon and the other team's going to tell them no.
Right. I mean, it's basically like how every fantasy baseball trade ever in the history of fantasy baseball has gone down. You just ask for way too much and then work your way down from there.
Well, I mean, you know that you did something wrong, whether it's in fantasy baseball or real baseball. If you call someone or email someone an offer and they say, deal.
Yeah, right, yeah. You have probably overlooked something.
Yeah, you probably didn't get as good a deal as you maybe could have. But anyways, on to less dirty things.
Yeah, I am a dirty boy no longer. So now we're gonna talk about
a drop.
Yeah, now we're gonna have to talk about less dirty things. So the less dirty things we will be talking about today, we're gonna talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates, what's going on with their season so far. We're talking about the Cleveland Indians, what's happening in Tribetown, and then we're going to wrap up today with a very interesting Seawolves shout out. It's one of the more unique topics that I think we'll have a chance to talk about this season. So let's start with the Pittsburgh Pirates, Jason. Going into tonight, what's that?
They're not doing too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, they're 42-40 going into action tonight. 7-3 in their last 10 games. They're playing pretty well. And if I told you, Jason, guess what one of the strengths of Pittsburgh's team has been this season? You might be surprised to know that their hitting has been one of their strengths.
Wow. Over
the last few weeks. So this little turnaround is kind of
Now wait a minute. I'm looking at these numbers. These numbers you put in the notes, are they in NL or the whole league?
In baseball.
Well, that's not too bad.
Yeah, no. Relative to last season.
Yeah.
Their offense is performing better than they did last season. Their pitching is really what's...
Oh, yeah.
Not...
Blech.
Yeah, it's kind of let them down. Relative, again, to their pitching last season, where they were one of the best bullpens and starting staffs in the league. But if you look at Pittsburgh's offense, though, they're triple slashing 258, 332, 386. So that's 10th in baseball, 3rd in baseball, and 13th in baseball. I mean, they're getting runners on base like crazy right now. And the barometer that I like to use, I like the OPS Plus. I think it's a clean number, adjusted to 100, taking in park factors. When we first started the podcast, when I was using OPS Plus just to kind of measure offensive success, at one point Pittsburgh was at 95. And I'd have to go back and look at the notes and see what week that was. So, you know, like they were a below average offensive team. Their OPS Plus is all the way up to 103, which is good for 9th in baseball. So all their stats are all above league average, other than slugging is the only one, and it's just, you know, a few points below league average. So their offense has had quite the surge over the last few weeks, and it's kind of correlating, I believe, with their stronger play and their better record.
I thought you were going to say the promotion of Gregory Polanco.
That also may have something to do with it. He's been playing like a man possessed to start off his career, which is, and we talked about, Chris and I talked about this last week, which is basically what Gregory Polanco needed to do. Like, Gregory Polanco needed to come up and just, like, play lights out in order to kind of keep the media and the Pirates fans at bay.
Right.
So it was nice to kind of have him come up and just, you know, just tear it up to start his career, because I think that kind of did take a lot of pressure off of him.
I noticed you left out one stat, one offensive stat, which is, it's not a sabermetric stat, but it's kind of the point is runs.
Yeah.
And they rank 17th in runs.
Now, yeah,
that could just be some bad luck, of course. You know, but it kind of goes, it makes me think about, I don't know if you remember, I said this earlier in the season on a podcast, I wonder, a team that has a lower batting average but a higher OPS, how that affects their runs produced, because you need more walks, essentially, than hits to score a run.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're, say you have the third best on base percentage in the league, but the 15th best batting average, I wonder how that affects your run production compared to, say, well, I mean, even just the opposite.
Like, right, yeah.
The more hits, the less walks.
Yeah,
because to me, if you have a lower batting average, and I mean, obviously getting on base is good.
Right.
You get on base, you don't make an out, the inning continues, you know, you move on down the line. But, you know, it's just a simple reality. Say one guy gets a single and the next guy walks. Well, that has a much different outcome than a guy walks, the next guy gets a single.
Right.
Depending on where the singles hit, that could mean men on the corners rather than first and second.
Right.
Just saying.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. Pittsburgh has been one of those teams traditionally that, and I'm going to take a look and see if I can find this statistic. But Pittsburgh has been, just for as long as I've been watching baseball in Pittsburgh, a team that's had a hard time leaving runners on base. Like, Pittsburgh leaves so many runners on base every year.
But this is kind of my point. If you, you know, are lower on the totem pole in batting average but higher on base, that's going to lead to leaving a ton of runners.
Right, yeah, to stranding runners. Yeah.
I mean, you're going
to
be, that's like kind of the point. Like, the Indians are often the same way, and it always makes me wonder, because it makes me think, you know, Carlos Santana. Like, you'll see at the end of the game, like, Carlos Santana has a line where it's like, he's 0-for-2 with 3 walks, and he left 7 guys on base.
Right, yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, but he only made an out twice. Like, that was a productive at bat, but maybe not as productive as we would have liked in certain situations. You know?
Yeah, right.
It's interesting. That's all.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And I'm trying to look for if there's a team left on base percentage.
I'm sure there is.
So we have something to look at. But yeah, I don't know. It does get frustrating to watch, and you definitely, like I said, you notice if you are just watching enough baseball. There are teams that do this more than other teams. And yeah, Pittsburgh and Cleveland are definitely, you know, two of those teams that seem to put a lot of runners on base, don't seem to drive a lot of runners home. And, you know, Pittsburgh's homering at a decent rate. You know, they're homering once every, like, 38 at-bats. It's nothing ridiculous. You know, it's just right around league average that they're, you know, getting the big boppers to drive in their runs too. So, yeah, it would be kind of interesting to see whether anyone's done any research on team left on base percentage or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, just kind of, not to get too off topic, but I noticed that if you, on Fangraphs, if you sort by team walk rate, the A's, of course, come up on top. They also have, that's got to be one of the highest. They also have the highest run total. And it's interesting because their ISO is in the top 7.
Yeah.
You know that, so it's like their batting average is not all that great. It's similar to Pittsburgh's. So it's like, that's kind of what the difference seems. You know what I mean? They're getting guys on base and they're cashing in with big hits.
Like, right.
They're getting one or two guys on base and then hitting a double, you know, or hitting a home run. They're getting a lot of bang for their buck, essentially.
Right.
But that's the kind of thing that probably is a lot of luck.
Yeah, some of it. I mean, yeah, a lot of it, again, goes to just your overall team philosophy. You know, like, Oakland loves those Jack Cuss-type players.
Exactly.
You know, those three-outcome-type guys. Yeah, I might, you know, I got a lot of time off in the summer. Maybe I'll do a little digging of left-on-base percentage on my own. See what we can come up with.
There you go.
But so the hitting, basically the whole long and short of that point was that the hitting's doing okay. I mean, it's, you know, league average or better in a lot of categories. Oh boy, Russell Martin just got picked off there. So if you're looking at Pittsburgh and where they're regressing, one of the big things that everybody, all the talking heads wanted to talk about this offseason was Pittsburgh's bullpen. You know, Pittsburgh had one of the best bullpens in all of baseball last season. And if you're looking at their bullpen this season, you know, Clint Hurdle's still getting his money's worth out of that bullpen. They've thrown 200, going into tonight, they've thrown 265 and two-thirds innings. That's the sixth most in baseball. And they actually, you know, their bullpen, for as many blown saves as they've had, you know, everybody kind of likes to hop on the, you know, the blown save stat as far as how bad Pittsburgh's bullpen has been. But, you know, their ERA is only 3.22, and their FIP is only 3.69. So it's not even like, you know, their bullpen should be pitching worse than they are. I mean, their bullpen is pitching, you know, right around a, you know, a 3.22 ERA. But they're only striking out 7.93 batters per nine, which is down a tick from last season. They're walking 3.22 batters per nine, which that's probably been their bullpen's biggest weakness this season, or what looks to be their biggest weakness after last season, is the command and control. You know, you're putting a lot of runners on base in a lot of games where you don't have the biggest leads to work with. And I think a lot of that has translated into why Pittsburgh's been blowing games late. You're blowing games late. You know, you're putting guys on base with those slim leads. You're putting more guys on base with those slim leads. And as a result, you're losing a lot of those games later on. You know, they're still stranding runners at a decent clip. They're left on base percentage right at 78%. And they're getting ground ball rates right around the rest of the team average at 48.8%. You know, the only other thing you can look at, again, looking at that command and control, their homer to fly ball rate has jumped up to nearly 10%, which, if you looked at their bullpen last season, they finished last season at 8.2%. So, you know, you look at their bullpen and you think, well, yeah, there was some regression, but everybody was kind of expecting that regression after the stellar season that they had last year. And you think the general volatility of bullpens, you know, it's not like their bullpen has completely fallen apart, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah, it's not the best in baseball this season, but it's not as bad as everyone's making it out to seem.
Point, though, their bullpen has a little different look to it these
days. It does, yeah. Yeah, smooth transition right there. That was Keith Stone smooth right there.
Hey.
Yeah, the Pirates, on the 27th of June, they traded Jason Greeley to the Angels, seemingly out of nowhere. Like, I hadn't read anything, hadn't heard anything from anybody talking about them shopping around Greeley. You know, you had a lot of fans clamoring for it, like typical fans will do, like, oh, get that bum out of here, we're tired of seeing him throw. But nothing that Pittsburgh was, like, close to anything or actively shopping anyone. So they traded him to the Angels for, their struggling reliever, Ernesto Friere, which I thought was a pretty solid move on Pittsburgh's part. I don't know. Did you have any opinions one way or the other as a non-Pirates fan of the move?
I think it's a good trade for the Pirates, because they have to have been, you know, what, a couple weeks from maybe DFAing him?
Right.
I mean, honestly, right? How much longer could this continue?
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, and you got to factor in the fact that he's old, so that's going to spur you down, you know, the DFA road. You're trying to contend. That's going to spur you down that road. So the fact that you could get anything is a win. I don't have a lot of confidence in Ernesto Fieri. But I think he has just as good, probably better chance of straightening things out than Jason Grilley, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And when, you know, I posted a big article on our website after the trade, you know, Grilley's biggest problem again this season, his velocity was down. You know, last season his fastball averaged 93.3. This season it's down to 92.7. And again, going back to the struggles with the bullpen in general, his command of the strike zone, I mean, you can go look, I posted the graph from FanGraphs on our website. You know, he was leaving 7% of his pitches, you know, middle up, 6% of his pitches right down the middle, 5.6% of his pitches, you know, middle low. Like, he's leaving, like, yeah, you know, 20% of his pitches right down the heart of the plate. You know, with Frieri, you're getting a guy who's obviously, you know, his stock is low. You know, the Angels aren't pleased with him. And everywhere that you read, basically all anybody wanted to say was, this is a great change of scenery trade. That was all anybody wanted to say. Like, it's good. Yeah. It's good for Frieri.
I really don't know that it's going to amount to much.
Yeah, I mean,
but I think it's again,
right. Yeah, I think it has upside for Pittsburgh. I mean, if you look at Frieri, you know, and you look at the book on Frieri, there's no doubting that he has amazing talent. I would almost, like, for Cleveland fans, kind of equate him to, like, imagine like a Carlos Carrasco type pitcher, where you know he's got tons of talent. It's just figuring out how to get it out of him. You know, they're both right around the same price. They're both under control through next season. I think it was a risk worth taking for the Pirates. You know, you get a younger, harder throwing reliever. You know, now you're just kind of counting on Ray Searidge to work his Searidge witchcraft on him.
Yeah, I mean, Frieri's heat map doesn't look real good either, but...
Yeah, right, yeah. Everything is really red right down the middle.
Yeah, that's kind of a bad sign.
Yeah, that's not good. I think it was a good move. I think it has the upside of potentially helping out Pittsburgh a lot. You know, the downside, you got a guy you just threw out there in low leverage situations.
Melanson's still going to close.
Oh, yeah. Melanson's taken over as the closer, which, you know, he closed in the interim last season when Grilley was hurt. He closed in the interim this season when Grilley was hurt. That was no big deal. I think the emergence of Tony Watson over the last few seasons as not just a good left-handed relief pitcher, but just a good relief pitcher overall, made this trade a little easier. You know, you're not worried about having a guy to pitch in the eighth because you have Watson to slot in there. Melanson taking over as closer, I don't think you miss a beat as far as the end of your game is concerned when you're throwing him out there. I certainly don't have any concerns about Melanson. You know, Melanson is a command control kind of guy to begin with, which I like. You know, he's not looking to put guys on base. I feel really confident with Melanson at the end of games, certainly. Our bullpen, it looks a lot different. I don't think necessarily in a bad way. On a interesting side note, did you see Jason Greeley's parting shot?
No, I didn't.
Let me pull up the exact tweet that sent Pirates fans into an uproar. Jason Grilley, so, you know, he gets traded. Obviously, you have to be excited about going to your new team or whatever. Jason Grilley, on his way out the door, said, and I quote, "Pumped to officially get my feet in the dirt today with my new Angels teammates. Excited to play for a powerhouse team."
Oh.
Yeah, now what's your take on that when you read that? Just, you know, imagine you're scrolling Twitter. That pops up on your Twitter feed from your former closer who's just been traded to the Angels. What's your take on that?
I mean, you know, I'm not one to get all worked up about tweets.
I'm not either. But even I kind of looked at that as like, oh, that's kind of a shot across the bow there.
It's true though.
I mean, wasn't it? I mean, it. You know exactly what you're saying when you type that, and I think you know exactly what would be implied when you type that.
Yeah. So you know what? And you know what? In some ways, I don't blame him because I get to this point, and I'm about there. Where it's like, if you don't want to actually spend money on your baseball team, then go own something else. Like, it costs $14 million for a frontline pitcher. If you're not willing to pay it, please take your money elsewhere.
Yeah.
Kind of the point I'm at, honestly.
Let me tell you what he said the next day. So the next day, he wrote, just to clarify, I'm excited to play for, in quotation marks, another powerhouse team. Very grateful for my time in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's not what he meant.
No, I don't think it was. But I don't think he enjoyed the backlash from all of the Pittsburgh trolls just hopping on and just laying it on thick. Myself included. I'm not going to lie. Myself included. I trolled the hell out of his Twitter feed after that. I said, after I read his pump to officially get his feet in the dirt with his new powerhouse team, I said, Pittsburgh was pumped to trade you for a relief pitcher with a 5.11 ERA. So take from that what you will. And then I didn't feel bad after he said, just to clarify, because he should have clarified that right away. So done with the bullpen. Anything else any other points you want to hit on with the bullpen before we move on to other things with Pittsburgh?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So, Starling Marte missed some playing time. Missed about a week with a thumb injury. Now, this was after he took a knee to the face in a series against the Rays. So, he was going to steal second base and just caught a knee right in his noggin. So, he was, like, super woozy. They called out the trainers. You know, like the trainers and Clint Hurdle walked him off the field. You know, it looked like a pretty clear cut case of a concussion.
Right.
And so, you know, they take him in the clubhouse, whatever. You know, everything comes back negative for the concussion. They say, although he did hurt his finger on that play. So Starling Marte, again, you know, he's been great in the time that he's played in Pittsburgh. But, you know, in his young career, you know, we were talking about this with Dr. Garrett last season after he was only finished second in the league behind Shin-Soo Choo and hit by pitches. Like, he misses a lot of time because,
you know,
he hurts a finger or he gets hit on the hand or things like that.
That would be my question. I mean, can you call – what does it take? How many more times on the disabled list is it before he gets labeled as brittle?
I don't think we're close yet. I mean, I think we're heading in that direction where you're kind of looking at it like, oh, okay, well, he hurt his finger. You know, he didn't take a trip to the DL. It was just he missed a bunch of games. He appeared as a pinch runner before he started his next game. You know, and he's back in the lineup now. He's one of those guys you hope that things like this don't keep happening to him. Those random injuries, you know, like the broken hand on the hit by pitch or, you know, things like that.
Right.
And, you know, I guess he's avoided major injury. You know, his trips to the DL, they've been the 15-day variety. You know, he missed a week with this finger injury last time. So it's just kind of something worth keeping an eye on. Again, when you watch enough baseball, you just start to notice things like that more frequently, I guess. So, now, speaking of less positive injuries, Gerrit Cole returned from the DL against the Mets Saturday. He, you know, because this is collectively bargained, players don't have to go on rehab assignments. You know, they have the right to decline a rehab assignment if they choose. And Gerrit Cole declined a rehab assignment, came back for a start against the Mets, and was promptly rocked.
Oh, it was ugly.
Yeah, it was not a good start. He pitched four innings, gave up seven hits, five earned runs. I mean, it was pretty ugly, which got me to thinking, Jason, what do you think about players being able to turn down rehab assignments from their club?
I think it's stupid.
Isn't it? I mean, it really makes you realize how strong the players' union is in baseball.
Yeah. I don't know why. I mean, it's also stupid of Gerrit Cole to turn down the rehab assignment.
I mean, oh, absolutely.
How conceited and arrogant do you have to be to turn down a rehab assignment? I mean, really?
Yeah, go down to Indianapolis for a start. Make sure that everything was rusty. That's at best.
You know, when this injury cropped up, it was after a couple bad starts. It'd be nice to see a good one.
Yeah, get your feet underneath you a little bit.
Stroll out there again and get smacked around.
Oh, and he just got whacked. Yeah, he had no command of anything.
And it was a hot day, and his face was about beet red.
Yeah, right.
For a lot of reasons.
I mean, I will say the only takeaway that I had, you know, his velocity was okay. You know, there was nothing really alarming about his fastball velocity, but
yeah,
it was not pretty.
It wasn't a good outing.
Union jobs, man.
Yeah.
Union jobs. So again, hopefully he's getting stuff back on track. I mean, I feel like there's like a natural progression to injuries where, you know, you're injured, you go on the DL, and with pitchers especially, to kind of get you back in that routine, you take a DL trip, you go get a start underneath you, depending on how that start goes, you come back into your next start ready to go. Right. And it just kind of everything seemed really rushed with him. You know, he comes off the DL, oh, he's going to start against the Mets on Saturday. You know, you didn't get a chance to get a good feel for how he was throwing prior to his start.
Exactly.
Now, one of the players that has had a lot to do with Pittsburgh's offensive surge over these last few weeks is super utility player Josh Harrison, who both manager Clint Hurdle and general manager Neil Huntington stated this week that Harrison was going to continue to get his playing time in a super utility role. Now, Josh Harrison has come out multiple times and said, yes, he would love to be an everyday player at a position. You know, that's his goal, is to be a major league player, major league regular, I should say, instead of just a, you know, like a Ben Zobrist super utility type guy.
Right.
What do you think about Josh Harrison as a non-Pirates fan? Have you been following anything with him this season?
I have. It's kind of one of those things, honestly. From a fantasy perspective, the other day, for instance, I did not pick him up. My brother did. It's kind of the situation where, from a fantasy perspective, I'm just kind of like, well, like let's get the juice out of the lemon before it dries up.
Right.
But, I mean, he's had a lot of hot streaks in his career. He's had a lot of cold streaks. I mean, he's had it together here for a solid month. But do I think that this is the real Josh Harrison? No. I mean, 280 maybe is his ceiling, 270?
With yeah, speed, like a 270, 280 type hitter.
With speed and versatility and very little power. I mean,
again, I think there's something to be said for a player like that. I think a player like that can absolutely be valuable.
Oh, it's a useful player, definitely. I mean, obviously when you get into arbitration, those players tend to get cut because they're not that useful.
Right.
Because the difference between a guy like you know, people might be thinking like, well, what about like a Ben Zobrist? Well, Ben Zobrist has some power.
Right.
You know, he provides some fairly strong power that Josh Harrison doesn't have. And I think that's probably his biggest shortcoming. You know, that's what's going to separate him from an everyday player and a guy who finds himself wandering when it becomes arbitration time, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. And actually, one of the things I was going to bring up, he hits arbitration next season. Now,
I mean, the first year is probably okay, but
yeah, right. I mean, he's probably going to be somewhere in the, you know, like the what, $3 million range.
Yeah.
Which
is fine depending on what your other options are, but
is he the type of player, so let me ask you this, because I've formulated my own opinion, but I'm kind of curious to hear what you think. Is he the type of player that would you look to, knowing he's 27 years old, you know, he's hitting basically what they, you know, what everybody likes to call the prime of his career. Would you, knowing how versatile he is as a player, want to maybe buy out a year or two of free agency, get those arbitration years under control, and continue to use him as a super utility type player? Or do you want to take him through the arbitration process year by year and just kind of get what you get out of him?
I think the cold hard business decision, honestly, is you leave him as an arbitration player because he's probably going to have some pretty rough years.
Right.
Like, yeah. You know, he'll have good stretches. He'll have a month in July or something where he's really great and Clint Hurdle can play him every day. But I think at the end of the year, he'll probably have numbers that don't exactly bring home the big ARB money.
Right.
You know, and so I think they probably could save money in the long run by taking it year to year. I mean, if he's going to give him a great deal or whatever, go for it, but I think probably the arbitration is the way to go.
That's what I felt the exact same way. I thought that while it's nice to have the right arbitration years settled because you know financially, you know, where you're going to be at. I think it makes sense to take him year to year. You know, when you're going to arbitration with a guy like this, you know, last season he played in 60 games. The year before that was his career high in games played at 104. The year before that, you know, was his rookie year. He played 65 games. His OPS plus in each of his first three seasons prior to this season, 83, 73, 96.
Right.
I don't think you're going to have a difficult case to make as far as how you're going to not need to pay him a ton of money, I suppose.
Right. No, I agree.
But I love him in that super utility role. I mean, I think it's a great fit. You know, you can give Pedro days off, Neil Walker days off. You can put him in the outfield if you need to. Yeah, I think he's a very valuable player as that super utility type player. He is the Cordell Stewart of the Pittsburgh Pirates roster, if you will.
No. Move on, please.
So just a couple more notes before we move on to Cleveland. Austin Meadows is rehabbing his strained hamstring and looking to return to action by the end of this week. So it'll be nice to get one of our top prospects started with his season finally. Josh Bell, Pittsburgh Pirates outfield prospect, was named to Team USA for the Futures game.
There you go.
So that's kind of exciting.
Josh Bell, who is the subject of many trade rumors.
He is, yes. Yes, Josh Bell's name pops up quite a bit on the old hot stove there, which leads us to our last, my last point that I'd like to bring up, which are some speculative trade rumors for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, Chris and I wrote did you see that article that we wrote this week?
I did.
We each talked about our speculative trade targets for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, our trade talks were limited in scope, I suppose you could say, because of the area that Pittsburgh's been rumored to want to upgrade, I guess, this season. Which, if you had to guess, Jason, where do you think Pittsburgh wants to upgrade?
Pitching.
You would have guessed correctly there. Yeah. After they apparently let A.J. Burnett walk last season, they realized the error of their ways and are looking to get a, I guess, not a frontline starter, I would assume, but a another top-of-the-rotation type starter to kind of pair along with Garrett Cole there. So Pittsburgh has been rumored, and this is I mean, you can go find this on Twitter, but per tons of sources on Twitter. Pittsburgh has been rumored to reportedly have been interested in trading for Arizona Diamondback starter Brandon McCarthy, which kind of outraged a lot of Pirates fans. If you look at McCarthy's numbers, they are not pretty this season. I don't know if he's made a start since we posted that article, but, you know, he's 2-10 on the season, which losses are going to catch everybody's attention because that's just the way people think still with baseball. So he's 2-10 with a 5.11 ERA.
Yeah, that doesn't inspire much confidence. I won't lie.
Yeah, no, it definitely doesn't. But here's the thing. When you go look at his FIP, so his fielding independent pitching, his FIP is actually 3.88. So he's, you know, he's pitching decently. You know, he struck out 87 batters in 104 innings. And he's the kind of pitcher that he fits the Pittsburgh Pirates mentality of pound the ball into the ground and let them hit it into the shift.
Right.
You know, Pittsburgh's ground ball rate is like 50%. It's the best in baseball again this season. Brandon McCarthy's ground ball rate is 55.6%. When he throws his sinker is a heavy sinker. His sinker gets, it induces ground balls at a 60% clip. So McCarthy is one of those guys that has been rumored to have been on Pittsburgh's radar. Now, what does it take to acquire Brandon McCarthy? That I'm kind of curious to see. He's under control for this season only at $10.25 million. So you're paying the prorated portion of that. You know, we're halfway through the season. You're paying somewhere around $5 million for maybe if he stays healthy, another 100 innings.
Right.
I don't know what Arizona's going to be asking. I guess maybe if the Houston Astros leak documents or any indication. The Diamondbacks are probably asking for Tyler Glasnow, Nick Kingham, and Alan Hansen in return for Brandon McCarthy. But I think he makes a good fit. I don't think it's a sexy trade. And I don't think it's a trade where all Pirates fans are like, oh, yes, our savior is here. But, I mean, I think it's a trade that, again, basically what you're getting is Charlie Morton, another Charlie Morton on your roster.
Right. I mean, what do you think would be an acceptable? Do you think Josh Bell is too much, straight up?
I wouldn't deal a top 10 prospect for 100 innings of Brandon McCarthy.
Well, so then give us a name, man.
Maybe Brandon Compton. Maybe a player like that. Brandon Compton and a comp pick. Or Brandon Compton and, you know, a player to be named later. Let's let you go dig through some 19-year-olds, you know, like a Cody Dixon or something. But I wouldn't dig into my top 10 prospects for 100 innings of Brandon McCarthy at $5 million. I just wouldn't.
Maybe I'm out of it because I don't watch the Pirates every day, but Compton has no starting ability?
No, Compton, he's spot started this season.
That's what I thought. So you'd rather have McCarthy than Compton?
I mean, if you're talking about upgrading, yeah. I mean, if you really view Brandon McCarthy as an upgrade, you know, Compton's upside is what, a 4-5 starter. You know, Brandon McCarthy's upside, you know, you've seen Brandon McCarthy's upside. It's, you know, as a decent 2-3 starter.
Interesting.
You know, yeah, I guess I would deal a Compton type player straight up for McCarthy. Or, you know, again, with one of those maybe player to be named later type prospects. But can I tell you, because I'm really proud of this, can I tell you the player that I secretly really want?
sure.
who I haven't seen pop up in any trade rumors. If you go read the article, I did a little more digging on it, so you can go read it. I think Pittsburgh should go target Tyson Ross, the San Diego Padres starter.
Yeah.
Ross would be, I think you're going to get his Arbiers. So you're going to get a couple years of control. He has a slider that really fits into Pittsburgh's philosophy of inducing those ground balls. So he has a decent ground ball rate. It's the second in baseball. He has the second best ground ball rate at 60%. Like I said, he doesn't hit arbitration until next season. And I think you can go get him for a, you know, maybe a decent package of players. But I think you get a guy who, if, you know, again, you get that Ray Searage witchcraft going, maybe you get him, you know, throwing his changeup more effectively. He has the stuff to become, you know, number two, top of the rotation type starter.
Right.
So you can go read all about Tyson Ross. I mean, I did all the work on the website, so you can kind of go see, but I think Tyson Ross would be a player I would be looking to target, in my armchair general manager seat. So that's it for Pittsburgh, Jason. I think we're ready to talk about Tribe Town. So what's going on in the city of the Cleve?
Well, over the weekend, it was the official midpoint of the season. At that time, they were 39 and 42. I believe now they're 39 and 43. I think that's about four games off the pace from last year. Which doesn't sound too bad, except, of course, remember last year's pace needed a 10-game winning streak in September to make the playoffs. So that's kind of, you know, not you should be shooting a little higher than that. Although I will say that the Tigers are just as up and down as the Indians this year. So I don't think it's going to take quite as many games to win the division this year as it did last year, but they need to improve, we'll put it that way. Case in point, I just want to mention that real quick, recently, they've had a rough few games. Josh Tomlin threw a beautiful game on Saturday where he one-hit the Mariners, which was great. But then on Sunday, the Indians were one-hit by Felix Hernandez, and then they were one-hit by Dan Heron last night. So the Plain Dealer, of course, going on about, you know, they haven't scored in 20 innings. The sky is falling. I just say, you know, who cares? It's two games. As one of the commenters pointed out on the article, Tomlin throws a one-hitter, and, you know, they praise him for how amazing his performance was. The Indians get one hit, and it's because they stink.
It's because they're awful, yeah.
You know, it's like, come on. Can't have it both ways. With that said, there's a couple guys I do want to talk about, kind of dive into. And the first one is Nick Swisher, Mr. Brohio himself.
Brohio, Swishalicious.
Yeah, he looks real bad. He's striking out every 3.3 at bats, and he has no power. The average stinks. Can't play the outfield anymore. So he's been sitting a lot lately because the Indians have been playing in the National League parks for interleague, and they've been using Santana pretty much exclusively at first base because Santana has turned it around.
Right.
So I have a couple points. One is a question. One is an idea that I heard today. We'll start with the idea. It wasn't actually brought up about Nick Swisher, but it was brought up about David Wright, who has a bad shoulder. And Eric Carabel on the Fantasy Focus podcast was talking about how he thinks Wright's numbers all across the board, like even his walk rate, his on-base percentage, could be impacted by the fact that the opposing pitcher knows that he's hurt. And his point basically was like, he knows he's hurt. His bat speed's slow. He knows he doesn't have it. So they're not going to throw him balls. They're just not nibbling. And I haven't looked at the numbers to back up that, but it makes me wonder if that couldn't apply to Swisher as well, since he's striking out you know, at an alarming rate, if they're just like coming after him because they know he's not right. I think the idea is interesting. I don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah.
My question, though, for you, I mean, Swisher was a guy who was consistent for about, what, 10 seasons?
Right.
I mean, it was always the same, 250, 260, around 20 home runs and 80 RBIs. Do you think this is just a temporary funk or maybe related to an injury? Or does someone so consistent for so long really get this bad this fast?
I mean, that's quite the precipitous drop-off there. Oh, wow, Pittsburgh just won. Ike Davis. Nice job. Sorry, Pittsburgh just they just won the game there in sweet little comeback fashion against the Diamondbacks tonight.
Nice.
Yeah, like I watched Nick Swisher the other day when I was watching Cleveland play when they were playing the Mariners, and he definitely does not look good at the plate. You know, his swings don't inspire a lot of confidence. You know, he wasn't putting together great at bats. I don't think you just kind of, you know, I would think that you would regress a little more instead of just falling off a cliff like this.
Right.
I don't like to think that his career is going to end in this fashion. Like, suddenly he's a Mendoza line hitter who can't get on base and can't put together a good at bat even.
I mean, I don't buy that either. And my point is, Santana had enough history behind him that no one was buying it. Swisher's got twice that.
Right.
You don't get bad this quickly when you're at that kind of skill set. You know, Swisher's not like a Prince Fielder, Mo Vaughn body type.
Right, yeah.
You don't age that quickly. You know, understand? It's like, maybe it's a lost year. I mean, that's very possible. Maybe this is like the start of the decline. But I don't think he's this bad.
I don't think so either. I mean, I don't. Again, maybe that's just the optimist in me. I don't think his career is going to end on a season, you know, or is the decline of his career is going to start on a season where he hits sub 200 all year. And
I mean, is it, you know, possible now that he's like a 240, 250 hitter? Yeah, I mean, that's possible. But I don't think he's just going to drop off the table.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It's hard to watch right now. Don't get me wrong, but
yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I mean, his numbers aren't. He's still hitting under 200, isn't he?
I believe so. I mean, it's.
Let me pull it up here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, his triple slash is 192, 283, 316. Oh boy.
Yeah.
And you know, like his whole shtick is, you know, he's an on base machine.
What was his on base?
In his 270 plate appearances, his on base percentage is 283.
See, and that's where Carabel's point is interesting to me. You know, maybe they're not scared of him anymore.
Just coming right at him.
Like, go ahead. I haven't seen you hit a ball good all day.
Right.
I'm going to throw you a fastball until you show me you can hit it.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically been an above average hitter in the league his entire career. I don't think at 33 years old he just drops off like that.
I don't either. Now, the guy who is concerning, he's not as bad as Swisher, but he's a little more concerning because he doesn't have the track record, is Kipnis. Because he hasn't looked very good this year either.
No, he has not. My fantasy team has noticed that.
Yeah, mine too. He has no power. I mean, he's got 3 home runs, 22 RBIs on the year, 249, 331, 364 triple slash. So, I mean, he's still walking because his OBP with a bad average of right around 250 is still at over 330. But the power is just totally evaporated. And he doesn't have the record of a Santana, so he certainly doesn't have the record of Swisher. To me, it's one of those years that for Kipnis, in the development of a player, sometimes you have those lost seasons. and it's beginning to make me worry that this is going to be one of those years. I mean,
yeah,
he's the kind of guy that when he gets hot, he can carry a whole team for a month.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He could hit 10 home runs in July and have 13 homers and 50 RBIs by the end of the month, and his line would look beautiful. But I also am starting to wonder if at the end of the year he's going to have, like, 12 homers and 60 RBI and, like, a 250 batting average.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just kind of going to go, blech.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like you said, I mean, he's been at least somewhat productive getting on base. You know, he's 25 walks in his 239 plate appearances. You know, he's basically just been a little bit below average hitter. But when you're looking at a guy who last season triple slashed 284, 366, 452, you know, with 17 home runs and 30 stolen bases.
Right.
This season with his 3 home runs and 8 stolen bases, doesn't have quite the same appeal, that's for sure.
I mean, he's never had a season in his entire career this low, even all the way through the minors.
Right.
You know, which makes you think maybe, you know, he's nursing an injury, maybe he's whatever, maybe he's just in a slump. But
yeah, maybe it's just pitchers making adjustments. Yeah, I mean, that's always a possibility.
Because the interesting thing is that his K rate is actually at a career low.
That is kind of interesting.
Like, in 2012, it was 2% lower. But, like, compared to last year, it was, and in 2011, he's usually in the low 20s. And he's at 18%, which is pretty much totally in line with his career numbers.
That is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, his career walk rate is 10.4%, and he's at 10.5%. His career K rate is 19.3%, and he's at 18.8%.
Huh.
His ISO is down about 30 points, which is obvious because he's not hitting any home
runs. Right, yeah, these 3 home runs halfway through the year.
But anyways, the last guy I wanted to talk about is Justin Masterson.
Oh, nasty, nasty. No extension for him.
Yeah, he's supposed to start tonight's game, so he's going to start in about 20 minutes after they skipped his start this weekend because of a sore knee. He said it had been bothering him since the second start of the season, which coincidentally was his first bad start of the season. Because I don't know if you remember, but opening day he pitched like seven, I don't know how many runs, but 7 very strong innings against the A's. And after that, it's just been up and down and pretty ugly. He threw a bullpen over the weekend, which I guess was enough to satisfy the Indians staff. Honestly, I was really hoping he was going to be put on the DL. Because I was really hoping that there was something wrong with him that would be the reason why he stinks.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like when he goes and he just takes a few days off and throws a bullpen and they say, oh, he's fine. I don't really believe that. And B, it makes me suspicious if there is nothing wrong with him.
Right.
I mean, I just dropped him today in my fantasy league to pick up Mookie Betts.
I have to say that's a good move.
Because I just couldn't wait any longer, and frankly, because I think that he's hurt, and I don't think tonight's going to be any better. Especially against the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Indians were right to not give him an extension. But how do you treat him now in the offseason?
I don't know. I mean, it does make you wonder. You look at the decline in his numbers. So last season, he was striking out, you know, a batter an inning. You know, he'd walked 3.5 batters per 9. This season, he's striking out 8 batters per 9. and he's walking almost five batters per nine. I mean, that's those are alarming spikes in his numbers.
Right. And a knee injury would account for a lot of that. You know, a bad plant is going to get you out of arm slot. You're going to be erratic.
Which he's had issues with that.
I mean,
in his career before staying consistent.
Yeah, he's always had an erratic arm slot. But, I mean, can you make him a qualifying offer? Wouldn't you be worried he'd take it and stink again?
I don't think he would, because I think the market for pitching is such that I think he still goes and gets a multi-year deal somewhere.
I agree. I think you do make him the qualifying.
I would make him a qualifying offer.
Frankly, at $14.5 million or whatever it'll be this year, 1 year of that isn't that bad of an investment, and he could be really good again.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it could be the best pitcher on your staff for that.
And yeah, I mean, we've seen Masterson pitch at his best, and it's good.
Right, and chances are, though, like you said, that the Yankees or the Red Sox will offer him like a 4 or 5 year contract, betting that this is just a bad year.
Right.
So the next guy I want to talk about is Francisco Lindor.
Ooh, now this is an exciting conversation. I am excited about this.
Well, there's an exciting part and a not exciting part. The exciting part is Lindor was named to the Futures game for the third consecutive year.
Which is very exciting.
Which is very exciting because he was named as an 18-year-old, which was his first year. And that's incredibly rare. But it's also rare to be named three times. Only Lindor, Shin-Soo Choo, and Edwin Encarnacion have ever been named to the Futures game three times. And those are all pretty good players, really.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, E squared is the lesser of Chu and him, and he's pretty solid. So that's very exciting. What's not exciting is what happened to Francisco Lindor at the end of last week. When it was the day after he was announced that he was going to be in the Futures game, he took a bad hop off his face in the Rubber Ducks game, and he was diagnosed with a non-displaced nasal fracture. So basically he has a broken nose. He's expected to miss 7 to 10 days, so he could be back at the end of this week, this weekend maybe. He did pass all the concussion tests, so that's a positive. I mean, you know, hopefully he's fine. He's having a great season in Akron, and probably was about ready to be promoted to Columbus after the All-Star break. So far in Akron, in 72 games, he's slashing .283, .362, .409, with four triples, nine doubles, six home runs, 43 RBI, and 19 steals.
How excited are you about this kid as an Indians prospect? Is he like the Gregory Polanco of your franchise?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Like everybody in Cleveland, the buzz is just, it's palpable.
I mean, and when I read that and he's got six homers, nine doubles, and four triples, that's the development of his bat to that level puts him in another class, you know? I mean, he always was going to be an okay hitter and always able to get on base. But if he can provide even just a little power, I mean, if he can hit 10 home runs a year, that puts him in another class as a player. And he's so young.
Yeah, paired with that defense. Yeah, absolutely.
He's so young that there's so much room for the power to grow. The 43 RBI make me happy. And the 19 steals. Oh, Lindor. It's going to start in September.
It's going to be Hurricane Lindor just taking the league by storm.
It is. It really is. Another kind of prospect I want to bring up is Mike Poppy, who the Indians drafted 38th overall with their competitive balance pick. He's the last of their top 15 draft picks to sign. He came to Cleveland today and signed because the University of Virginia was eliminated from the College World Series over the weekend, was it? End of last week? Recently.
Yeah.
They were eliminated. Yep. So his team was done. So he came to Cleveland today to sign his contract. He's going to be assigned to Mahoning Valley. He's an interesting guy for Indians fans to watch because he bats left-handed. He's one of the best college bats. Plays first base and outfield. So, I mean, that's right in the Indians' wheelhouse. That's exactly what they need. And he's supposed to have an advanced, you know, college bat. He had a 297, 445, 498 line this year in Virginia. He's kind of a line drive-ish hitter, but he's only was a junior, and he's 6'3", 195. So obviously he's got what the Moneyball scouts would call a frame to dream on. But with Poppy signed, that means that the Indians signed all of their top 15 picks, 24 of their first 26, and 28 of their 33, which is great. I mean, because it was a good draft. It was kind of lauded in a lot of the prospect sites as one of the stronger drafts. So there's going to be a big infusion of talent. Of course, that means there's going to be a lot of cuts, unfortunately, coming. A noteworthy cut made last week was that Nick Hamilton, the son of Indians broadcaster Tom Hamilton, was cut. So we wish Nick the best. Maybe he'll take over his father's eventually. I don't know what his career plans are, but the Arizona League and the short season teams should be a lot of fun to watch because since they moved that signing deadline up, guys like Poppy and Bradley Zimmer and Sheffield and Hawken are already out there.
Yeah.
Already playing, which is great. The bottom of the Indians farm system is getting kind of clogged up. Like there's, you know, like Clint Frazier probably needs to be promoted here and some other guys to make room for this influx. I did want to talk trade real quick because, of course, the trade deadline's coming up at the end of July. Two big prospects that are kind of being thrown around as who the Indians might trade. One is Tyler Naquin. Can you guess the other one?
I'm going to say Carlos Moncrief.
No, actually, he's kind of having an off year, so I think that's impacting that a little bit. Although he could maybe be, you know, the additional piece in a deal.
That was my guess. Another name being bandied about other than Tyler Naquin.
He's the youngest player in the International League, which is the Columbus Clippers League.
With the Clippers.
He's already been to Cleveland on a few occasions.
Not Jose.
Yes.
No.
That is a big name that's getting thrown around, and I do not like it. I do not like it one bit.
I mean, again, and I guess we've talked about this on previous podcasts, what's one thing that Cleveland has plenty of? Middle infield type guys. Depending on what your return is, Jose Ramirez could be a great trade chip for somebody.
Right. I mean, to sit here, it's easy to sit here and say, you know, like, well, you'd rather trade Ronnie Rodriguez.
Right.
But what's the difference in the return? And long term, what's Ramirez's future? You know, he's blocked by Kipnis at second and Lindor at short. He's not really a third baseman. He's not really an outfielder, but he plays there too. I mean, to me, his future is Mike Avilas, a cheap, more versatile, faster, more dynamic Mike Avilas. But I don't know.
I like him. He's a lot of fun to watch.
I love him. And isn't that an amazing stat? He's the youngest player in the International League.
And he's already had a couple trips up to Cleveland.
Because I think he's 20.
Yeah.
And I think the average player in the International League is 27.
Right.
And he's hitting, like, I know his on base is around 400 and his slugging is around 400 too.
Yeah.
Which is just insane for a 20-year-old. But if you had to guess who the Indians might be looking to trade for, what position, what would you guess, Andy?
If I had to guess, I would guess starting pitcher.
That's accurate because kind of the same situation as the Pirates. The guys who aren't performing, you know, are kind of linchpin pieces. You're not going to move them.
Right.
And your biggest weakness is where you have a hole is starting pitching. I saw one scenario laid out today is that the Mets and the Indians are natural trade partners. Because the argument was that the Mets need a real second baseman so they can put Daniel Murphy in the outfield. And they have no real second baseman. Of course, Jose Ramirez is a second baseman.
Right.
So the idea was you start with Jose Ramirez on one side and say Jonathan Nease on the other.
And work from there.
And work from there. The other idea is if you don't want to give up someone with the ceiling of Jose Ramirez and you're looking for a more short-term thing, you talk about ex-Indian Bartolo Colon. And, of course, there's talk about, you know, maybe you kind of the reverse of how Carlos Santana was acquired. Like, you do include Ramirez for Cologne, but the Mets also give up, like, Noah Snydergaard or someone.
You know? Right, yeah.
That way there's, like, more than Cologne coming back to the Indians to give up a top-flight prospect.
I would love that for you guys to put together a package like that, go get a Noah Syndergaard or
Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Got a lot, I mean, of vowels in it. I wasn't sure.
That's kind of like the opposite of the deal that you guys made, your Pomerantz White trade a few years ago where you bring in Ubaldo Jimenez. And it, you know, they can be risky because you look at Drew Pomerantz and Alex White and didn't turn out for the Rockies.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's why you have those trade chips there, is to make a move like that. You know, you're not going to be able to play 10 players in your infield, so.
No, you're not.
Get some value for them. Little interesting fact, by the way. The Detroit had a shutout tonight. Rick Porcello threw a shutout without striking out a batter or walking a batter. 9 innings, 4 hits. No runs, no earned runs, no strikeouts, no walks.
That sounds like a Rick Porcello outing, honestly.
What is that?
Well, I think that's going to wrap it up in Cleveland. We better get on to the Seawolves shout-out so we can get this thing up posted.
Yep. So let's go on to a real quick Seawolves shout-out. So yesterday, Jason, we went to Buck Night featuring your Akron Rubber Ducks.
Yeah.
So we went to Geriot Park, got to watch the Erie Seawolves take on the Akron Rubber Ducks. I have to say I was really disappointed because when Lindor got drilled in the face, I knew I probably wasn't going to get to see him.
Yeah.
So we got to see Ronnie Rodriguez. I forget who they actually had starting at shortstop. Tony Walters was DHing. So there were a couple guys that were fun to watch.
I think they brought up Eric Gonzalez.
Yes, that's who it was. Gonzalez was a short.
He's the other one. There's pretty much people are saying if the Indians make a big trade, either Eric Gonzalez or Jose Ramirez is going to be gone.
Yeah.
Because Eric Gonzalez is an exciting prospect too, but anyways.
So by the time, I mean, Buck Night was packed. The line to get in the stadium started at the ticket booth and almost wrapped all the way up to French Street. So, I mean, it was almost like a block long of people waiting to buy tickets to get into the game. I didn't actually hear the announced attendance. I wanted to check it out because it was probably pretty close to a sellout if it wasn't. So we get into the game. We go get our wristbands. On Buck Night, you get a wristband so they can tell that you're over 21. By the time that we were done waiting in line to get our beers and dogs, and the time that we'd sat down in the seat, Erie Seawolves starter Nick Avila gave up 8 earned runs. It was brutal. We were standing in line, and we thought we must have misheard. We heard the announcer say, "And it's 6-0 at the end of the first." What? So we get back in. I mean, Avila didn't even make it. He didn't even make it out of the second. I don't think he actually recorded an out in the second inning. Yeah. Just got smacked around by Akron. The end of the game, has a press conference, announces that he's retiring to become an area scout.
He's had enough.
That just beat it out of him, I guess. So Nick Avila gives up 8 runs in an outing, and then retires to become a scout. And I actually think he said he's becoming a scout back in Akron. I think that was what he said in his interview.
He's like, "I want to scout these Rubber Ducks guys. They're good."
I tweeted out the link of his interview on Go Erie. I'll have to, if you're curious, go check it out. It's interesting to see.
I want to know if he's related to Alex Avila and Al Avila.
Yeah, that would be worth looking into. He's 25 years old, so you'd figure he's somewhere in that Alex Avila, if they were related, you know, he's in that range there.
Yeah.
Where they could be siblings, potentially. The only thing that I wanted to talk about with the Erie Seawolves pertains to the Futures game. So we've already talked about we have Pittsburgh and Cleveland both represented in the Futures game with Francisco Lindor and Josh Bell. The Erie Seawolves, so the Detroit Tigers, will also be represented in the Futures game with outfielder Steven Moya, who will be named to the world team, and Jake Thompson, who's a high-A pitcher, who's worth keeping an eye on. He's been named to the USA team. For Detroit as well. So they'll both be playing in the Futures game. Moya's having a good season. And actually, he'll probably be one of the guys we'll have a write-up on in the next few weeks. You look at Moya's numbers, and, you know, on the surface, they look pretty solid. You know, he's hitting .263, .287, .519. 17 home runs already. You know, he's driven in 53. Here's the big problem, Jason.
I know.
Nine walks to 89 strikeouts.
Yeah. When he makes contact, though, watch out, man.
Oh, that, I mean, it, the ball just snaps off of his bat. I was talking with Chris. I was texting Chris last night, just back and forth. I think Steven Moya has a very interesting upside, so I'm kind of excited to write about him over the next coming weeks. He's one of those guys. I mean, you know, I've seen him enough now that I have a pretty good feel for the type of player he is. You know, his type of swing that he has, and the types of struggles that he'll probably experience as a ball player. So I'm kind of excited to get writing this one up.
I know that when I took my father-in-law up to the Seawolves game, he kept commenting about Moya making hard contact, man, because every time he was up that night.
Yeah, the ball just cracks off the bat.
Lacing the ball around. And he's a big, got a real big frame. You know, he's another guy you can dream on his frame.
Oh, yeah, he's 6'6", 230 pounds. Yeah, he's a big one. He is a big boy.
Tigers would love to DH him in, like, 3 years.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
When Miguel Cabrera's too old to move.
Cabrera's knees have given out.
Oh, we've gone really long. You better wrap this up.
We have. It's been too long since we've talked, though. That's why.
Yeah, I know.
I missed you while you were gone. yeah, but that's going to wrap it up tonight. also we'd like to thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes, you give us a rate and review. That's going to help people find our podcast. And we'd love to have more listeners who like Pittsburgh Pirates and Cleveland Indian baseball tune in. So we'll probably be posting our next podcast in the next 7-10 days or so. So keep your ears to the ground for that. If you want to check us out on the website in the meantime, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatepb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatepb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.